A big 3 hours coming up. 25 minutes to nine. First up, though, Andrew Jones.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse with Matthew Stewart.
Andrew, good morning.
G'day, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm well. You're looking relaxed as always. No tie. Your standard attire.
No tie.
I was just reflecting on the. It seems like a sort of almost a distant and recent memory when you hear the highlights of the Spring Carnival just gone with Animo and Gold Trip from a Racing Victoria point of view. When we look back at the Spring Carnival just gone, what do we make of it all?
Look, it was a brilliant Spring Carnival. But before expounding on that, I'd just like to recognise Matt Hill, the best in the business, and listening to him talk through the highlights of all those races was just spine-tingling. You missed the best one, which was on Geelong Cup Day, when I backed a horse called Hypothetical. And as it's coming over the line, he goes, "It's not hypothetical, it's real." And it made my year. He's a legend.
There was a race call he did with Tosin Stardom, and he used the line, "Tosin Stardom's drop from the sky," and someone has named a horse "Drop from the Sky." So that's how iconic his race calls are. He actually has got many hats. He came in and did the verdict with us on Monday, and he was very up and about a few issues that we're going to discuss today, including the potential of pushing the Spring Carnival back. It's like a jungle drum that gets louder and louder. So it's a discussion I know that you and Matt Welsh have been having. There's probably a debate to be had about that. I think there's probably a few major country clubs like Cranbourne, Ballarat, Pakenham who are very happy with their time in the sun and they want to grow that. So they would probably argue strongly for a retention of where they're at. So there's a lot to squeeze in and probably compromise to be met there as we plough into that discussion. First of all, before we get to that, I just want to have a chat about the terrific innovation. I know Matt Welsh was largely part of this as well. And when you think about the grassroots and then the top end of town, it's so important. And my heart is always with the country racing and the picnics and the smaller fish in the industry, and a terrific innovation to try and sort of protect those who want to invest in the industry. And the best way to do it is to give them an early return. And the best way to get that is to try and supplement the earnings that maiden gallopers can win. Tell us a little bit about this maiden series that's been introduced at Pakenham.
Yeah, absolutely. The Sportsbet Future Stars series is a $1.2 million series targeted at maidens. So there are 12 heats, each worth $70,000. And they culminate in a final that is worth $300,000 on the first Thursday night of March. It's run exclusively at Pakenham between 1,200 and 1,400 metres over 12 weeks plus the final, showcased on Thursday nights free-to-air on racing.com. So it ticks a lot of boxes for us. I've been on this program before talking about formats and how important I think they are in racing, where you have rounds leading into a final, and that's a format that every sports fan can understand. And Matty Welsh has applied that concept to maidens to give, as you say, owners an opportunity for a first win and a big earn on their first win. As we know, owning racehorses is a somewhat of a lottery model, this improves the odds of a winning ticket.
Is it seen by Racing Victoria as important to look at the complete spectrum? I mean, we've seen a lot of these pop-up races, which every time one comes up, I roll my eyes, and others do as well, about this tiny little percentage of the richest people in the industry. One of them will benefit from one of these pop-up races, and it doesn't help the people at the bottom end. And to me, this is a lovely indication that there is a counterbalance mentality in the industry as well, and there have been other innovations as well, reverse ballot races, more money at the picnics, more money at the bottom end as well. Is this just an example of the continual role that Racing Victoria has in juggling both ends of town?
Yeah, it's juggling and it's balancing, and we're very conscious of the need to keep all parts of Victorian racing strong, city, country, top end, picnics, maidens, you know, Melbourne Cups. It's an ecosystem, and every part of the ecosystem has to be strong. Owners need to be able to get a return. Trainers and jockeys need to, and stable staff need to be able to earn a living, and clubs need to be sustainable. So we're really managing an ecosystem, and it's like having a lot of pots on a very big stove, and you've got to make sure that they're all at the right temperature, simmering or boiling.
Good analogy. The picnics is a lovely pot for me. It's a really colourful pot, sort of rainbow-coloured pot, you know, under elm trees and so on. And it's, to me, it's the most easily accessible entry point into a sport that not everyone loves, because it's just such a lovely experience. And it's not all about wagering. It's not all about, you know, the welfare part of the picnic racing is that there's not much of a return, yet they still do it, and that's an amazing sentiment from those involved. And they've had a terrible run, haven't they, with cancellations, and I think out of necessity they rolled out the Ballarat Synthetic, which was great to get the season underway, and there was a couple of lovely stories there as well. Be lovely for the picnics to have a clear run right up until Easter now, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we've had a shocking winter of weather, rain-wise, and so we've either lost or had to move upwards of 40 meetings, including a bunch of picnic races. So I'm looking out the window and seeing blue sky. Let's hope that continues. Won't put my money on it, but I'm hoping.
Well, and they take a while to recover, because they're all volunteer sort of created, these tracks as well. And at the moment, Balnarring on Saturday is a bit touch and go. I think it's a 50-50. They had 6 mils overnight, so we'll see what happens there. And the rain actually affected the Jericho Cup course on Sunday, where the paddocks were out of play and they had to sort of rejig the tricky course. Matty Welsh was down there, and we're going to I'm going to drag you down next year to experience, because once you've experienced it once, you'll never not go again. How is the Jericho perceived by Racing Victoria? It's a race that a few of us are really, really passionate about and close with Bill Gibbons. And now that he's stepped out of sustaining the prize money, it's now in Racing Victoria's lap to do that. And it's in the Warrnambool Racing Club's lap to promote it. And I'm sure CRV has a role as well. And I know there's been some ads as well. So CRV has certainly played a role there as well. Is there a vision for how big the Jericho can be from Racing Victoria? I think it could be one of Victoria's great cultural events beyond racing, but how does Racing Victoria perceive the Jericho Cup?
Well, we love the concept. As I mentioned earlier, I love formats and I love race concepts, and there isn't a concept like it in Australian racing. It's the longest, or one of the longest big-time races in Australia. It commemorates something very special. The course is unique. Running in both directions in the same race and going hither and thither through the paddocks, uphill and down dale. So it's a brilliant concept, and we expect it to grow and grow.
To what level?
I don't know. I think finding the best time for it is critical. I think it's working pretty well in its current slot. It's a Sunday, so you're probably going to get a local crowd rather than a visiting crowd, because people have to work on Monday, and going to the races and driving afterwards probably doesn't suit a lot of people. Warrnambool's pretty full over the summer break, so whether that's an opportunity remains to be seen. But you know, that's a process that we'll work through over the next probably 2 or 3 years, obviously in close communication with Bill and Warrnambool.
I know Tom O'Connor, the CEO, would, in an ideal world, would love to have it as a standalone Saturday, but whether the quality of the racing would develop the wagering interest at the moment to stand up to, say, the standalones at Ballarat, Cranbourne, Pakenham, it would probably require an injection of prize money to lift the standard of racing. Is that probably maybe a bridge too far, or would that be possibly achievable?
It's not on the radar at the moment. Saturday racing underwrites the sport, so that's what underwrites everything that funds the sport. Prize money every day of the week is underwritten by Saturdays. It's probably 44-45% of our turnover in total. So we have to be really respectful of Saturdays, and we have to make the most of them. And shifting to a standalone Saturday, you have to be very confident that you're not going to drop wagering and drop revenue, because that costs everybody in the sport ultimately.
Well, that takes us into the next discussion about the ongoing discussion about pushing the Spring Carnival back, whether that means starting later or just making it longer. This sort of first came up with the MRC in the middle of COVID when they touted the idea of pushing the Caulfield Cup back, and that was knocked on the head because I think tradition and other mindsets took over, and it was basically if you shift, everyone has to shift, so therefore you can't be one out. The Zipping Classic has sort of landed in that spot 3 weeks later. And there is an ongoing discussion about whether we charge through with Metro feature racing right through until wherever, like even halfway through December. Cranbourne, Pakenham, what's the other one? Ballarat are sort of trying to eke out sort of their own existence in that time frame with standalones. They're about 2 years in, and they're trying to consolidate community relationships and grow the sport in other areas and so on. So if the Spring Carnival in town was to push on further, then that would have some sort of a damaging effect on them. If we do this, how do we juggle the whole story?
We've been very clear that our approach is to do it on a no-worse-off basis. And if you can't do it on a no-worse-off basis for the clubs affected, then you shouldn't be doing it, because the hypothesis is you can create value for the industry by changing the schedule. So if you create value, you should be able to share that value fairly across those affected to make sure that they're no worse off. So there's absolutely no sense of trying to damage Cranbourne or Ballarat or Pakenham or anybody else with any schedule changes we may or may not make. It's about finding the right slot for their events and giving them the appropriate context and the appropriate support, whether prize money, marketing, or whatever else, time in the calendar, so that they're more successful than they are now, while also boosting engagement and therefore revenue for the industry.
If they argued that there is no better place on the calendar than there is right now for them, say if they went earlier, they'd be subjected to wet weather and cold weather, and if they went later, it would probably be at a time when people are going to the picnics and so on. If they all presented a case that said, look, our community engagement, we get 50% of our annual return from these meetings, and in the case of Ballarat and Cranbourne, that's how they sustain their large and growing training operations. Does the desire to do it end right there if these clubs come out and say there is no better time for us than now?
Not necessarily, no. You've got to be guided by fans first and foremost. So fans and punters, are, along with owners, are the people who finance the industry. And so what they tell you is what you pay attention to first. And at the moment, we go from Champion Stakes Day, which is about $140 million wagering day, to about a $50 or $60 million wagering day at Cranbourne.
And that is with lesser class racing and lesser prize money and lesser promotion as well, though, isn't it?
Sure, but you're dropping off 60% of your wagering, which means you're dropping off 60% of your audience. And so at a time of year where there's very little competition for viewership. So if you're running a business and your business drops off 60% week to week, either it's been Christmas, it's a retailer and you've just had Christmas.
Well, that's what the Spring Carnival is, though, isn't it?
But then they have Boxing Day sales as well to get around that problem. So you look at your business and you work out, well, can we do we have to run off a cliff, or can we take advantage of what is effectively clear air in the Victorian sporting calendar and the national sporting calendar? So, you know, I'm pretty clearly of the view that October and November are opportune months for big racing. I'm not the only one with that view. So it's about working out the best way to maximise that opportunity.
But is there also a question of punter fatigue and carnival fatigue? I mean, carnivals can't go on forever.
Well, a carnival goes for 5 or 6 weeks. The AFL season goes for 7 months. So I think we're along.
But we race every day.
They understand that.
Every day, and we have an autumn carnival as
well. I understand that, but you're talking about marginal, the additional punters who don't punt every week. You're talking about the casual fans, and a lot of fans switch on to racing as soon as the footy finishes, which is, every Victorian knows, is the last Saturday in September from a men's point of view. And then for a lot of people, that's when the Spring Carnival starts, on the first Saturday of October. And, they're as pumped as they've ever been on Stakes Day, and then there's not much for them after that. So you know, I think that's a real opportunity. And if you're worried about fatigue, then you start later rather than finishing earlier.
Okay. Is there a risk, though, of taking people out of their habit, of taking people out of season? I mean, they put a cricket game on. They've tried to inject a cricket season out of season, even though the weather's been great. All the reasons why we want to race at this time of year, 10,000 people rocked up to the MCG because it was not part of the way they view the calendar of sport.
Yeah, there's a risk in trying to change people's habits for sure. So you've got to take a calculated risk. In terms of the risk of taking people out of season, I'd argue that having a Group 1 on the last Saturday of August is doing exactly that. It's trying to take people out of season. They're not ready for Group 1 racing at that stage necessarily. Through September, depending on which team you follow, if you follow Geelong, it's still footy season. If you follow somebody else, maybe you're starting to take an interest in racing. But fundamentally, footy dominates until the end of September. October comes around, people are ready for racing, and October, November are prime real estate for racing, and we should capture it.
All right, so where does it go from here? There is a little pitter-patter of a jungle drum that's suggesting there might be some massive changes. What's the, say, for instance, a race like the Cox Plate, where do you envisage that might be on the calendar in time to come?
Well, there's a range of possibilities. Nothing might happen. There might be no change, or there might be minor change. There might be significant change.
What would the significant change be?
I won't preempt because they're subject to discussions with the clubs involved. There's a lot of stakeholders involved in these ones. But, you know, you've got to ask the question, what if you take as a given that the Melbourne Cup is not moving and therefore Melbourne Cup week is not moving, you've got to ask yourself the question, what can you race after the Melbourne Cup week that will credibly be a climax to the season rather than an anticlimax?
So let's just say, without it knowing where this is going, if you ran a Cox Plate after the Melbourne Cup, say 2 weeks after the Melbourne Cup, instead of where it's been for 125 years... that would be seen as a reasonable gamble?
Where the Cox Plate has been for 100 years. Well, potentially, but that would be a discussion that you'd have with the race club, that you'd have with Racing Victoria. You'd do the maths. So maybe, maybe not. We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see with that one. That would be a major, major change, absolutely. We're with Andrew Jones, the CEO of Racing Victoria. We're going to take a short break and then come back and discuss a few other things as well. I'm with Andrew Jones, the CEO of Racing Victoria, discussing a few, well, potential issues in racing. But one thing that's not a potential issue is the issue with the acceptance fee no longer being free. It's a trial, I think, for 3 months. There's been a bit of a backlash narrative from the owners and trainers. I'll get to some of their comments in a moment, but just the rationale for reintroducing a fee, a non-acceptance fee?
Yeah, at the moment we've got about a 31% acceptance to nomination rate, which means that trainers are entering horses 10 times for every three races that they accept, or for every race they accept, they're entering a bit over three times. That's creating a couple of things, uncertainty for a whole lot of other trainers, and that perpetuates the cycle. You don't know if your horse is going to get a start in race A, so you enter it in races B or C, and then trainers in race B don't know if they're going to get a start, so they enter the horse in race A and race C, and it goes round and round. So it creates a lot of uncertainty for placing horses, and it also creates a lot of extra cost for Racing Victoria and clubs. And administrative effort, we think that time and money can be better spent elsewhere.
So the Jonathan Munns, Owners Association head Jonathan Munns, who's never afraid to come off a long run, has described it as an ill-conceived money grab, a relatively small amount, but a major inconvenience to trainers. He quoted an unnamed trainer as saying it's petty and pointless. And that they say that trainers had already agreed to a doubling of the scratching fee and the abolition of an unplaced starter rebate as some sort of a compromise going back a few years. And the Trainers Association say it's an essential management tool for horses, even in a welfare sense, like keep your options open. If it's a heavy 10 there and a soft 5 there, that's a better result for the horse, and in a welfare sense, a better scenario for the horse. But obviously you're saying there is also a downside to it as well. So I guess it's a counterbalance between what these guys are saying and the argument that you just put forward.
Yeah, and it's important to understand there are also mixed views in the training community. We've had feedback saying, you know, this is a really good step forward. We've had feedback saying this is a step backwards, and Jonathan has given us that feedback forcefully and directly along the lines.
As he does.
In the press release. Yeah, and that's fine. It's a free country. Reasonable minds may differ. But when you've got 100 entries for a race with a capacity for 12 horses, it gets a little bit ridiculous. And as I say, that means owners then enter in another race and another race after that. And you've just got a whole lot of people running around chasing their tail and racking up administrative cost to Racing Victoria at Racing Australia. So, you know, I think there's a happy medium in terms of what's the absolute cost end up being. If a horse or a trainer accepts two times out of three, which is roughly the national average, and you've got a non-acceptance fee of, you know, $65, let's say, which is what Queensland's rate is, then, and the horse races five times a year, which is the average, you're talking about maybe $150 a year in extra cost against $65,000 in training fees. So we're not talking sheep stations for the individual horse. And if the fee's introduced, then you've got a much greater degree of certainty for all trainers and a lower cost to the industry.
I think the trainers are sort of saying that this could go sideways into a different discussion about programming and whether the issue with why they're nominating for so many races is that the programming requires some tinkering. Is that a discussion that they've had with you?
Yeah, we've had lots of feedback on it. In terms of programming, the exercise is to balance the race inventory, if you like, to the horse inventory. So if there are a lot of horses in a particular benchmark grade, then we want to make sure that the number of races in that grade reflects the horse population and vice versa. So, you know, that balancing act goes on continuously, and we're always trying to get it right, not get it wrong. So we get feedback on that all the time. But it's the, you know, rampant option taking where horses are entered into 3-5 races at once, obviously with the intention of running in one of them,
yeah,
that we're trying to reduce. And don't forget, we've got a 3-month review period, so if people are desperate to avoid the fee, then nominate in fewer races.
Well, and it's a trial, so it's not, nothing's locked in stone. So I think after 3 months, the pros and cons will probably be weighed up, and we'll go from there. Just before we let you go, is there some suggestion we might get a little uplift in the autumn? Certainly not by spring standards, but there's a suggestion there might be an announcement in the next week or so re autumn prize money.
Yeah, there'll be a little tickle in autumn. We're just putting the finishing touches on that. As I say, wagering's flattened out, so we need to be fiscally responsible. So it won't be anywhere near the increases in spring. We distribute roughly 44% of our revenue in prize money. So as revenue goes up, prize money goes up. And conversely, if revenue doesn't go up, then you know, we have to make sure that whatever increases we offer, we can sustain, because we don't want to be in a situation where we're cutting prize money down the track.
I think Matty Cain's going to be hoping that the Blue Diamond prize money gets somewhere near matching the Golden Slipper. Is he going to be reasonably pleased, or are the MRC going to be disappointed?
Watch this space.
All right, well, watch this space. Just a couple of little SMSs. We should compare standalone with similar city prize money meetings, certainly not with the championship day. So there's that view there, and someone's not happy with the quality of racing at the Jericho and says it would be insane to run the Jericho as a standalone Saturday. So plenty of those sort of notes coming through. Andrew, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for your time and your candour.
Good on you, Matty.
Andrew Jones there, the CEO of Racing Victoria.